Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Mr. Mayor, fellow members of the City Council, in less than 2 hours, liquor will be declared illegal by decree of the distinguished gentlemen of our nation's Congress. To those beautiful, ignorant bastards.
Prohibition!
I need everybody here to go back to your neighborhoods, to go back to your workplaces, to go to churches and go to the barber shops and go to the beauty shops and tell them we've got more work to do. Tell them we can't wait to organize. Tell them that the time for action is now, and that if each and every person in this country who knows what is at stake steps up to the plate, if we are willing to rise to this moment like we've always done, then together we will write our own destiny once more.
Well, welcome to the Savage Nation Monday edition. I mixed a few little things there. First, we had our leader from Chicago, Obama, telling us to go back to our barbershops. Actually, he was at the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation telling the folks there to go to their barbershops and beauty shops to organize again. But prior to that, we had a piece from the Boardwalk Empire. And the reason I mixed the two together is obvious, and that's because the princes of Hollywood and the princes of politics have lost touch with the people. Last night, HBO launched a new series that was really heavily touted called Boardwalk Empire. It was an HBO miniseries, which was supposed to be as good as The Sopranos. It was one of the most unwatchable shows I've ever seen in my TV life. And I've been watching TV since I'm 5 years old. I watched TV before it was even in households. I watched television when they put magnifiers on the front of the screen. I watched television when Howdy Doody was a household name. And I've seen good TV and I've seen bad TV. And I'm a big fan of The Sopranos. This was, as my father would have said, a stiff. A stiff of the first order. Now, let's start with the lead character, Steve Buscemi. Steve Buscemi's voice sounds like someone who is on laughing gas. His face looks like he has a medical condition. He is not attractive. In fact, he is an almost carnival-looking man. Buscemi should never have been chosen to play the lead gangster. He was a politician gangster, by the way, who created the kind of corrupt mob in Atlantic City in the 1920s. The first rule of drama is go for good-looking people or compelling people. Steve Buscemi is neither good-looking nor compelling. Steve Buscemi is at best a fine B actor. Supporting roles is where he has always shown his best. So that's number one. So the lead actor was horrible in this HBO series. Unwatchable, unbelievable. Everything was wrong. Number two. Allegedly, the series was directed by Martin Scorsese, which I don't doubt as his name is all over it. I can't fault the directing per se, but the story was so garbled, so pointless, and so pat and predictable that it was unwatchable. You had the rich as opposed to the poor in Atlantic City in the 1920s. You saw the humble household with the meal of the poor Irish family, juxtaposed with the rich dining on pheasant and drinking champagne with the hookers in the gambling hall and in the clubs. Every scene could have been predicted before it appeared on the screen. Number three, the constant flashbacks to the 1920s, the music in particular was so grating and so horrible and so unlistenable that I turned the sound off to see if I could even watch it without the sound. It was though Martin Scorsese was trying to create a documentary of the period as opposed to a compelling miniseries for HBO. Now, why am I talking about this new HBO series, Boardwalk Empire? Because this goes to the heart of the problem in America today. Both the princes of Hollywood and the princes of politics have lost touch with the people. The princes of Hollywood have forgotten that the people must be seduced into the theaters or onto the couches to watch their productions. Yet they couldn't care less. They are producing series like this for their own entertainment and to reward themselves. In essence, Martin Scorsese, Steve Buscemi, Larry David are all members of the same sorority from Brooklyn or Manhattan going back to the same period. And they think that the whole world can't wait for the next flatulence to emerge from their bowels. Well, I've got news for them. This is unwatchable. I had to turn it off. It was like going to the dentist without anesthesia. I understand it cost $20 million to produce. The set was supposedly a direct copy of the Atlantic City Boardwalk reconstructed in Brooklyn. All that is quite admirable, but so what? A documentary film about the era would have been more interesting. Now let's take a look at what else HBO has to offer. They showcase a left-wing hackneyed doper named Bill Maher, who is at best a bad entertainer. But who was entertained by him? Certainly not the majority of the American people. They detest his anti-American politics. So who is it that watches him? Why, it's the same crowd that seems to think that Steve Buscemi can play a lead role. It's the same crowd that thinks Larry David's mocking of Jesus are entertaining. And so therefore, this is the crisis that America is facing, where the princes of Hollywood and the princes of politics have lost touch with the people. This is Michael Savage, and I approve of my review and monologue. There's not one caller because you didn't hear it this morning on the Golfer Show, and that's your loss, not mine. As I told you, this is a different kind of radio show. It's not simply about politics. It's about everything. And since it's about everything, welcome to the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Well, I have other things I want to talk about. The right turn that America is going to take in November is a big story. We've gone so far to the left that the only thing that can save us from smashing into a bigger iceberg that Obama has run up against is a drastic turn to starboard, and we'll talk about that as well in the Savage Nation. I just got back from the East Coast. I was off the air Thursday and Friday and Saturday and Sunday. I got back Friday night. And I slept for two straight days. I don't know about you, but I hate traveling. In fact, I've told you that I hate traveling. I got another admission to make. Not that that's a big admission. I hate traveling. I've told you that for years. I've done too much of it in my life. There's no joy in it. Coming back to California from Florida, maybe this is an unfair analysis because this time of the year in Florida is a time that even the birds haven't come back. Even the birds who can afford to leave have left and are not back yet. The only people who are stuck in Florida are those on witness protection or those who were tax dodging. So anyway, the fact of the matter is I went down there. I have a lovely place down there, but I can't take it. I went outside. It was as though I stuck my head in an oven. I forgot what humidity is like. I forgot it. There's nothing like it in the world that's more uncomfortable for human flesh than humidity. It's like landing in Saigon in the 1970s or landing in Samoa in the 1960s or like landing in South Florida in the year 2010. It's all about the same thing. It's unsupportable. I come back to California. I go to my humble little cottage by the bay. I got to tell you, just sticking my head out the window is an experience that is worth having. I love here. I love it here. I love the Bay Area. It's almost worth paying the 10% or 11% income tax in the state that I pay on top of my federal taxes just to stay here. I mean, I hate to admit it. I honestly hate to admit it, but that's absolutely true. So here I am back in my environment. It's called acclimatized. I, Michael Savage, am acclimatized to the San Francisco Bay Area. And at a certain point in your life, you have to know what you are acclimatized to. And shifting climates is quite upsetting to say. Teddy, with all the fur, had it worse than I did. The poor little guy is an unclipped poodle who looks like a little teddy bear. I don't think he liked the humidity any more than I did. But he's back. He's happy. I'm back. I hate to say I'm happy. It's a word I don't use. That's reserved for children 3 years old and younger at birthday parties with hats or Democrats at Barbara Boxer fundraisers. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. You know what I've never gone to in my life is a political event, like when somebody wins, they all cheer in like the St. Francis Hotel with balloons. You ever watch those election nights and you wish you were there? Like, how come I wasn't there? Like, even if it's your party, like, you wanted the guy to win. You want to know who the people are who were there. Who are the apparatchiks who got invited? Well, 2 years ago when Obama, remember when he ran for office? It seems like 20 years ago before he hijacked America. Well, it's really only, what, two, three? How long ago was it now? It's 2 years? Two? Two and a half? I don't even know. I had a boat party in San Francisco Bay. I chartered a rather large boat. I had about 200 people donated to my Savage Legal Defense Fund and a few friends. It was catered poorly, by the way, catered very poorly. Did you ever go to a poorly catered event? That's what these people did to me. It was so poorly catered. It looked like a bad bar mitzvah in the Bronx in the 1950s when the parents are poor and they're skimping on everything from, they don't have the ice float. That was too expensive. And the roast beef is like a bad Hofbräu. Well, although the meat quality is good, there's one skimpy little roast beef that looks like it came off carrion, like a cow that died in the side lot. It was poorly catered. I mean, the food wasn't toxic, okay, but it just was skimpy. Let's put it to you that way. Anyway, that was the night Obama got elected. So I have a video, which I'm not selling you, don't worry. I'm not Sean Hannity or O'Reilly. I have video, and if you pay only $9.95, you can have a floor mat of me standing on. No, I have video. Of Beowulf is laughing. He was on the boat. Of Obama on a big screen on the TV, and I'm standing there as Obama's accepting the victory. Right? It was an amazing night, and we have it on video. Maybe it'll be in the Michael Savage movie. That speaking of movies, I was watching television a lot this weekend. I did. I slept and I ate. Oh, did I overeat? Have you ever tried an anchovy pizza when you've been off a cheese for about 2 years? And you say, you know what, I feel so bad from this trip. I am so burned out. I'm so exhausted. I'm so drained. I'm so out of it. All dietary advice that I've given over the years is now over. So I call up my friend Mark down the street. I said, Mark, make me a small pizza to go with the dinner. He said, well, what do you want? I said, make it with anchovies. He said, well, what else do you want on it? I said, I don't know. What would you put on it? He said, not too much. He's just a few tomatoes. So he makes me an anchovy pizza with tomatoes. I got to tell you, when you're in the mood for anchovies, by the way, they're RNA rich. They're one of the most important foods in the world, anchovies. You don't know this. They're so good that other fish eat them. That's not a bad line. No, the truth is that they're so good, they're so rich, and they're so, you know how they say fish is brain food? Well, where do fish go for brain food? They go to anchovies. I happen to love anchovies, so I don't eat them because they're too salty, and they only make me itch, and I stay up all night. But that anchovy pizza, prior to the pasta, whatever, was unbelievable, with two lobsters in it, and the scallop, and the shrimp, and the sauce was just right. It was one of those perfect nights. And as I said to you, this is Open Mic to Mike Monday. If you want to talk about HBO, if you want to talk about Boardwalk Empire, if you want to talk about whiskey, if you want to talk about the country turning radically to the right as soon as we have a chance to in November, if you want to talk about the tea parties, I like Earl Grey myself. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation Monday edition. It's Blue Monday. We haven't played Fats yet. We'll do that. We're talking about the president telling us to go out to our barbershops and beauty parlors and organize in order to save the transformation that he's trying to pull off on America. And then we have the flop, Boardwalk Empire, on HBO, possibly the worst series that they've ever made because they're out of touch with the average listener. And some of you disagree. I understand that. That's what makes the world go round. So Dan in Tampa, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael. How you doing, Michael? Hey, I got to tell you, I like Steve Buscemi. I think he's authentic. You know, he's not like a polished Michael Douglas type. You know, he's not feminine at all. I like him.
But did you see him in the HBO series that I was referring to, though?
No, I got to tell you, I didn't see it.
So what's the point of calling the show? I mean, you shouldn't have even been able to get on the air. The guy sounded like he was on laughing gas. He has like a weird voice. He's very good as a B actor. He can't be a lead man.
Did you see Fargo?
Now you're going to tell me that you like Florida too, I understand.
Man, I live in Tampa. I love the heat. I love it.
You see, now that's interesting. Yes, as I said, to each his own. I saw people running in the heat when I couldn't even stick my head out of the air conditioning. So you like Florida, you like Steve Buscemi, I'll bet that you hate poodles and anchovies. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. Play Fats Domino, Blue Monday, for me right now. And before long already, I'm going to be talking about Solenterates at this group, so if I can see where this is going. Nematodes. Isopods. Anthocephalans. Protozoans. All right, turn it off. Thanks very much. You know, I got to tell you something. You don't know much about sushi. I don't eat it. I do eat it, but it should not be raw. Don't eat raw fish ever again. I had this experience in Florida. I go to a seafood place. I order the tuna, and she says to me, I said, make sure it's cooked all the way through. She says, oh, the chef likes to cook a tank in the middle. I said, who's paying for it, me or the chef? Well, the chef likes to cook it then the way it should be. She said, and she tries to lecture me, Miss Waitress. I said, honey, I live in San Francisco. I get the best seafood in the world. I don't eat raw fish. I said, I don't like worms of any kind. I don't like protozoans, acanthocephalans. I don't like nematodes or cestodes or copepods or isopods. Tell the cook to cook it my way or go to the highway. The fish comes out tasting like a Brooklyn Dodgers catcher's mitt. They spited me, in other words. They overcooked it to prove to me I didn't know what I was talking about in terms of fish. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to eat fish like this, whether it's wahoo, tuna, or even dolphin, which is disguised as something else, or mahi, or ono, or ahi and yuppie, whatever you want to call it, I'm telling you, never eat raw fish, and never eat fish pink, no matter what Mr. San Francisco chef says to you, because fish are notoriously sick with what I just mentioned to you, protozoans, acanthocephalons, nematodes, cestodes, copepods, and isopods. I wouldn't eat it. Don't eat raw fish, period. Another thing I want to warn you about, since I'm talking about, is yellowtail snapper. You know what snapper is? Snapper eats crap. You don't know that. You didn't know that.
Savage.
So, we're talking about the flop Boardwalk Empire, which to me, I mean, unto itself, I wouldn't waste your time other than to say I'm amazed that HBO would invest $20 million and be so disconnected from reality and not even understand how bad this was. Yes, the period costumes were perfect. Yes, the sets were perfect. But so what? It was not good entertainment. And the lead character, Steve Buscemi, was horrendous. The wrong choice. You need a compelling, strong figure to play the politician slash gangster who built Atlantic City. It's not Steve Buscemi. In fact, his voice sounds... Could you play the trailer again? Listen and tell me it doesn't sound like he's on laughing gas. Listen.
Boys, Mr. Mayor, fellow members of the city council, in less than 2 hours, liquor will be declared illegal by decree...
Okay, you see what I mean? Declare illegal. There's something freakish about his voice. He plays like a second role. I don't understand it. The Sopranos had, would the Sopranos have ever worked if they didn't have the lead actor, whose name I forget because I haven't seen it in 2 years or more? Right, I'm supposed to remember it, Gandolfini. He's not in the news because he didn't shoplift or go into rehab, so I forgot he exists already. No, it wouldn't have been the same series, right? He was perfect for the part. He became the perfect of the Sopranos. Would Mad Men be anywhere without Ham, the actor Ham? No, and I'll tell you something else. Since they dropped January Jones from every series, from every show, it's horrible. She was so compellingly beautiful. She was so compellingly attractive of the 1950s, the cold, waspy chick who could cut your heart out with a look. Perfect for the role. So now that she's more or less out of the picture, it's fallen apart. I'm not interested in big-bosomed, ugly women in an advertising agency who are, you know what I'm saying? Like, big deal. I mean, I was never into Dagmar, Jane Mansfield. I had friends who were. They all wound up on medicine, medical conditions in their 18th year. Like, I'm serious. The young guys I knew who hung up on large bosoms were sick. They all wanted to marry their mother. I fortunately don't have that particular, you know, proclivity. Thank God. But the guys in, oh, look at this, look at the Dagmar, this and that. What is this with the... So I'm not that interested in Mad Men for that reason, because she's out of it, January Jones, because she's sort of on the the Vogue model. It was more or less on the flat-chested style. You know what I'm saying? You are what you are. You get what you get. It depends upon the endowment of the DNA. But the fact of the matter is, her face was compelling. She's a gripping actress. Now you have a series that HBO produces that is so not relating to the issues of needing a lead character that's compelling. That's all I'm saying. It's the same with politicians, is what I'm getting at. The politicians. How many of our politicians are really compelling? Let's get down to what we're talking about. Very few. Very few of them are magnetic, where they can give a speech and you hang on every word. They talk jargon. They don't. There's no, what's the word for it? No fire in the belly. They don't care about it. It's just a business to them, and we know it. Dem or a pub. You know what I'm saying? And it's the same in our churches, by and large, except for the small marginal churches, which still have fire and brimstone preachers. Most big religion today is not gripping. People don't listen to it, whether you're Jewish or Christian or whatever your religion is. There's no fire and brimstone. There are no lead characters in religion anymore either. Where are the lead characters? Well, they're found here and there. They're on talk radio. I'm a lead character. I'm telling you point blank. I know it. I have a magnificent presence on the radio. I have a phenomenal ability to hypnotize you with what I'm saying for a number of reasons. I don't want to analyze it too deeply after all these years. There are a few others who do a very good job of this, but they're not found by and large in politics. They're not found in the movies. By and large, there are a few. But where are the compelling characters today? I don't know where they've gone. They certainly exist. But the fact is, they're not really found in politics. They're not drawn to politics because it's too... the reason that compelling men are not drawn into politics, I'll tell you why. By and large, it's because there's not enough money in it, number one. It's a corrupt system that corrupts you. No matter how honest you are, you know, just watch Mr. Smith Goes to Washington with Jimmy Stewart. You'll know what politics does to anyone. Takes the best man and turns him into a bad person. There's almost no way to avoid it. The system is corrupt. And so where are the compelling men? I don't really have an answer. I'm sure they're in everyday life. You meet them here and there. The powerful characters, the very strong-willed people who grip you with their presence. Where are they? I don't know where they are, honest to God. But they're not in the movies anymore, by and large. And they're not in politics, is the point of the story. So now let's move on. .me. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to San Diego. Jay, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Yes, Michael, when you were speaking before about Howdy Doody, I didn't realize there was anybody else in the world who had the same experience I did. I used to sit in my father's knotty pine-walled basement watching a very fine piece of furniture that had something in front of it that looked like a 5-gallon fish tank.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah, in other words, that people don't even know that the early television sets were all very small tubes, vacuum tubes, and so some families invested in a magnifying screen that went on in front of the TV to make the screen bigger. Remember that?
It was enormous. The only thing that you didn't mention is there was always somebody in the neighborhood who had this 100-foot tower that was a ham operator, and every time you were watching your favorite show, you'd suddenly be hearing this guy talking to Tokyo or...
Well, you must have not grown up in the Bronx, because I can assure you in the Bronx, nobody had 100-foot towers. I never heard of a 100-foot tower, a shortwave radio. Nobody had it. I mean, unless that there were, it was after the war, remember, when I was born, after World War II. So all the Nazis were already working in the delis. They were no longer transmitting to Berlin.
Yeah.
Hello, come in, Berlin. Come in, Berlin. Come in, Berlin. Come in. This is Han. Come in, Berlin. Yeah, those days are over. Now you got a little come in Mecca, you know what I mean? Come in, Mecca, Mecca, come in. Come in, Mecca, Mecca, come in. Come in, Mecca, come in, Tehran, Tehran, come in. Why is he in my country? Why is Hitler in my country? Why is Hitler in my country? Why is my president affording him the protections due the head of a state who is friendly to this country? Why is Hitler allowed in my country? I sit here pondering this. When I look back on the history of the world, and I see what Hitler did, killing 6 million Jews and 7 million other innocent people. And I say that again, because you're never going to forget what he did to people. You're never going to be able to forget, well, by starting out the same way that Ahmadinejad has started out, with vilifying and hating the Jews, saying the Jews should be wiped off the map. Just look at one village in Lithuania and take a look at some of the pictures of the children who were rounded up and shot in the head by the Germans. The bastard shot the children in the head or threw them up in the air and used them for bayonet practice. It started with the words that Ahmadinejad has been using. And I say to myself, what the hell is the world I'm living in when we have a reincarnation of pure, unadulterated, psychotic evil in the form of this bastard, Ahmadinejad, and he is afforded the bodyguard protection of the President of the United States as he comes to my country to continue to spread his hatred. And wait, it gets worse. The bastards in the media expect of a head of state without once saying to him, how dare you repeat the lies of Adolf Hitler? Not one person in the media would say that to him. I say to myself, as I scratch my head, as I watch the vermin in the media produce their mediocre melodramas, my friends, today before, I say to you, 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Maryland, Tully, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind? All right, next case. We don't wait for clickers. If they have to click to get on the air, it means already it's going to be a slow mover. Okay, San Diego, David, you're next up. What's on your mind?
Hey, Michael Savage, how are you? I always wanted to talk with you.
How am I? The sushi is coming up on me. How are you?
Not too bad. No sushi for me today. Just a lot of irony in life. I thought you would appreciate, you know, with the tour, the new tour, pushing the old tour out at the social service offices here in California.
Wait a minute. The new poor pushing out the old poor. How does that work? Who are the new poor?
Well, the new poor are all the people who can afford a car but still don't have a job.
Right.
And the old poor are the people who have to bicycle and walk to the EDD to get their check. And unfortunately, the new poor are pushing the old poor out.
And so wait, are you a member of the old poor or the new poor?
Well, you know, I made more than $250,000 for a while, but luckily...
Hey, let me tell you something, David. I've been down, and I've been up. And so, to me, I got to remind you, there is no crime in being poor. I've said that on my show 100 times. I never mock poverty. I never mock the poor. Never. I never have in my life. I know what it is to struggle. I came from people who struggle. So you don't have to say to me, you're poor. It happens to people. So, you know, I'm not the kind of person who's going to make a joke out of that. Never would, never will.
Nope, there's no joke in being poor. Just, I'm sure you can identify, all my family are from Eastern Europe and been here 2 generations. I'm the 4th generation, I should say.
So what, you're on the rocks right now?
No, I'm doing fine. You know, I'm...
So how do you know about the new poor and the old poor?
Oh, you know, you just see it. You see that the in the local newspaper down here in San Diego that poor people are complaining that the new poor are coming to the EDD and filling up the parking lot and making the lines very long for them.
Oh.
And, you know, and...
Well, look, there are genuinely poor, and then there are the fake poor. There's another category of poor. The new poor, the old poor, and the fake poor. I mean, how do you explain people with food stamps pulling up in a new car, speaking in a foreign language and running in and cashing the food stamps? How many times I heard that on my show? You know, I mean, there's plenty of rackets going on here with food stamps in this country from top to bottom. And you know what? There are immigrants who come over here. They're here 2 days and they work their behinds off. And then there are people who've been here 100 years. They still don't want to work. Okay. I had 2 Somali guys come to my house today to deliver an office chair. How is it they came off the boat, these guys, and they got a job, a hard job as delivery men? How is that? Gentle, polite men. I mean, so you can't generalize. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. No malice intended toward people that, you know, they
no,
have.
No, I would say mallets intended, not malice. I say no malice intended, only mallets intended. Speaking of mallets and malice, I wanted to mention something else while we're talking about malice and mallets, and I forgot already what it was because it's Monday and I'm jet lagged left and right. East and west in 1 week for me is like an epic journey. It's not like the years I would travel to Samoa, Tonga, Tahiti, Marquesas, Palmerston Islands you never heard of. I was on collecting plants, and my plant collections are in some of the greatest herbaria on the earth, which I'm very proud of. It's some part of my life no one knows about, really. I devoted so many years of my life to those dreams as the plant collector, trying to find, you know, miracle cures that one day would come from the plants. And someday they may, who knows? I was not in the chemical side, of extracting these compounds, I was in the botanical side of speaking to the folk healer and living with them and collecting the plant and documenting it and making six different dried press specimens and sending them to six different herbaria in the world, including the Bishop Museum in Hawaii. And we had the other one, the New York Botanical Garden got one of my collections, and then Kew Gardens in London, which I'm not allowed to visit because I'm such a bad guy. They only allow Muslim terrorists in who would like to overthrow England and turn Buckingham Palace into a mosque. But I'm not allowed in to go look at my plant collections. That's the New England under big ears, the schmuck, Prince Charles the putz of putzes. I mean, I heard of Capo di tutti capo. This is the putz di tutti capo. Have you ever seen anyone like this, a lunatic like this? Never worked a day in his life. All he does is paint, lost his wife, married someone who looked 100 times worse, and he talks about global warming as though it's real, and then uses a 12-car train for 24 people to tour the British Islands to talk about global warming. Putz di tutto putzo, that's all I can tell you. But my father had his number. My father was a smart guy, never really went to school, immigrant guy, had to work, but he used to look at Prince Charles as a kid, he'd shake his head. And I'm about Prince Charles's age. My father was from Russia, so he hated royalty. He wasn't a communist exactly. He was not a communist, but he hated royalty. I mean, you don't have to be one or the other. I still don't like royalty of any kind. But the point is, because of him, he'd look at Prince Charles, and all he would tell me, I was 5, 6, 7 years old, he'd tell me, look what inbreeding does. He talked to me. He always talked like a truck driver. He'd say, look what inbreeding did to this kid. Take a look at the ears on him. He says, This is a throwback. Take a look at what they did from the inbreeding. I said, Dad, what's inbreeding? His inbreeding is when the brother does it with the sister and they produce a kid, or a cousin does it. It's too close. A gene pool. I didn't know what he was talking about. All I know is Prince Charles had big ears. And as time would show over the years, he fell off horses. He fell off a marriage. He fell off the wagon of rationality. But wow, what suits those English guys make. You can always tell by the shoulders. You know, that's how you judge a suit. You judge a suit primarily by the shoulder, how it sits. I remember, like, at the time you go on television, you always worry about, is it going to, you know, ride up in the back? I don't know how the English do it. They have a knack. There's certain things they could do. The Savile Row thing, where they could make it, you could be sitting, you could lying down, you could be kneeling, you could be on your knees. And then you can get up 2 minutes later and there's no roll next to your neck. They have, like, a trick thing that they put inside there. I'll be right back. Savage. It is the Savage Nation. I'm so glad to be back in the San Francisco Bay Area by the bay. The air is so beautiful. I mean, you know, when I'm in the mood, I can do radio like no one else on earth. But, you know, like when I'm not in the mood, it's hard. You can't do it every day the same way. Some days, you know, you feel ebullient and the words just roll off your tongue and you feel great and you could like roll the politics into the humor and it's a great day. And I'm in that mood today. Tomorrow will be the manic depressive thing tomorrow after the curry and no good. The curry Tuesday will be a horrible day, depressed, angry, whatever. You know, I was talking about actors and actresses, and if they're not compelling, why watch it? And how bad Boardwalk Empire was because Steve Buscemi cannot play a lead. I don't know what Martin Scorsese is thinking. I mean, he, you know, this guy practically invented the leading man. I mean, in the sense that he knows Robert De Niro from day one. Robert De Niro is so magnetic, you can put him in any role. Comedy, it doesn't matter. The guy is great. So, but then you're going to go like Buscemi. I mean, he's a second-rate, second-tier, very talented B actor. So that's why I said it's no good, Boardwalk Empire. It's like a bad politician, same thing. And then I was mentioning January Jones, how beautiful she was and is, and how once they moved her out of the AMC drama Mad Men, by and large moved her out. You know, it's lost it for me. And January Jones is for men who are schizophrenics. It's a term I described 25 years ago. Schizophrenia, you may not have heard of the word because it's not yet the diagnostic manual that the doctors use. But actually, I think schizophrenia, which I defined 25 years ago for some of my friends in North Beach, schizophrenia is a malady primarily suffered by ethnic males who are fixated on the Nordic Valkyrian goddess archetype. And I actually wrote it up that way, and that's January Jones. She is the Nordic Valkyrian goddess archetype, that cold, you know, that cold, distant mother that you could never have. And all wrapped up with sexuality at the same time. The sexuality that even when it's available to you, you know, you're afraid of it because you don't know what she's going to do to you. The whole thing is a reflection of schizophrenia for schizophrenics, which is what makes January Jones so appealing. I mean, it's she's like a mean Grace Kelly. Now, they've compared her to Grace Kelly, but she's a mean Grace Kelly. Grace Kelly was never, like, portrayed as mean. That's the funny part about it. But don't get me started on the whole women thing, because I have certain views of the world that no one has ever heard that are unique to me, and they're quite poignant. I mean, to be very honest with you, I've been around long enough to have views that are poignant. And I guarantee you, I don't care who you are, no matter how cynical you are, no matter how smart you are as a psychiatrist, you never heard of schizophrenia. And if you did, it was from me. I created it in 1977. But I defined it. It's a malady primarily suffered by ethnic males who are fixated on the Nordic Valkyrian goddess archetype. So either you know what I'm saying or you don't know what I'm saying. It's that simple. Chicago, Brian, you're on the Savage Nation.
How you doing? I'd like to let you know I'm a Chicago police officer in times that are rough and times where we're doing surveillance. It's great to listen to your show. It makes all the garbage that I see that you report.
You got to pick up the refuse of society. As I've said, I've got an officer of the law in my family, very close. I know from the inside what it is. It's got to be one of the most difficult jobs in the world, primarily because of the left wing scum who don't let you do your job, and then when you do your job, they try to crucify you. I don't know how anybody does that job. Teaching and policing, two of the hardest jobs in the world.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is FM Mike on the Savage Nation, and we're going to talk about love. How many windows I steamed up in my youth in the back of cars covered with plastic to this tune, I'd like to tell you. Remember Percy Faith, theme from A Summer Place? God, those are the days. Well, guess what? They're still going on. Just because you don't have that luck anymore doesn't mean the other... I mean, that's why the children won't learn anymore. That's why you have to put them on Ritalin. But here I am, I traded my beloved fog for humidity for a week, and now I got my fog back and left the humidity behind, and we're talking about the flop Boardwalk Empire and how the princes of Hollywood and the princes of politics have lost touch with the people, which you know about, but not in exactly the way I described it, because no one could do it in the way I do it. No one can combine the entertainment industry and the political industry in the same way I do and show you how it's off key, because they don't care what you think. And it doesn't matter because they get the money from the banks who eventually are bailed out by Timothy Geithner. So it doesn't matter if HBO goes bust. What matters is that Geithner buys them out through a stimulus plan and saves 12 jobs at $2 million apiece. But it doesn't matter because 12 jobs were saved so that Obama can tell you to go back to your barbershops and make sure you continue to transform America into a third world hellhole. Now, at the end of all of that, we were also talking in the last hour about, I don't know how I got into it, schizophrenia, which is a condition I described 25 years ago. I first described it to my friends in the streets on Grant Avenue of North Beach, and I had many a grown man on their knees. Ask them. I had many of them they were laughing. They were on their knees laughing. It was very funny when I first defined schizophrenia, and I described what a schizophrenic is. And that's because we were talking about entertainment and January Jones and what the archetype is. And I define schizophrenia as a malady primarily suffered by ethnic males who are fixated on the Nordic Valkyrian goddess archetype, such as a January Jones or the thin, beautiful blonde, right, in plain English. But what I didn't get to in the last hour, and I guess this is related to fog and humidity in some way, is the other side of it, which is schizophrenia. You never heard of schizophrenia either. Now, schizophrenia or schizophobe, you remember there's an Anglophobe and an Anglophile, right? So you could say that an Anglophile is someone who likes the English, and we well know that an Anglophobe is someone who doesn't like the English. Well, the same thing occurs with schizophrenia or schizophiles and schizophobes as schizophiles and schizophobes. But schizophilia is the exact opposite of the malady I described before. It's a malady primarily suffered by Anglo-Nordic males who are fixated on the biblical Semitic mother figure. And this is actually a good thing because it promotes hybrid vigor in the species, lessening the chance of a Prince Charles effect. In other words, there's less of a chance that your child will wind up with big ears and a lunatic traveling in private trains with perfect suits. You know what I'm saying? Do you understand what I'm saying to you at all, or am I talking to myself? You want me to play sound now? I mean, yeah, I could go to the sound with Delaware, O'Donnell, Witchcraft. Lisa Murkowski now is going to do a write-in campaign to get reelected because they can jury-rig the write-in. Actually, the funniest thing is President Bill Clinton trying a vegetarian diet. You hear this? That'd be like Bill Clinton trying celibacy. Here's President Bill Clinton saying he's trying a vegetarian diet to stay healthy. Listen to clip 15.
Have you looked that far down the road to grandchildren and the blessings of grandchildren in your life?
Yeah, I'm trying to stay healthy enough to have them. That's what I want to do.
Well, you look quite fit. How are you? And as I understand it, Chelsea asked you to slim down a little bit before you walked her down the aisle. But with your travel to Haiti, with CGI coming up, with being on the campaign trail, have you been able to manage to keep those eating habits healthy?
My travel schedule is cut back on my exercise some, which is frustrating to me. But I follow a pretty strict diet, and I try to limit how much I eat and what I eat. And I lost 20 pounds or so.
Vegan or vegetarian?
Listen to the rest of this puff piece garbage from Yahoo. May as well be the government press. Yahoo and the Huffington Post may as well be the government press. Listen to the next puff piece to Clinton.
Vegan or vegetarian or?
Yeah, pretty much. Once in a while I'll eat fish, but not often. Because I'm trying to be one of those experimenters. Since 1986, several hundred people who have tried essentially a plant-based diet, not ingesting any cholesterol from any source, have seen their bodies start to heal themselves.
Oh, please. I wrote the book on this in 1972. Please, Mr. Clinton, we may not agree politically, but trust me, I know more about this than the idiot who's advising you, and there's a lot less to it than meets the eye, so don't knock yourself out. I'm not telling you to go back to cheeseburgers and Monica Lewinsky types. And when I was talking about schizophiles, I was not discussing Bill Clinton. I want to be clear about that. I mean, yes, there is a malady primarily suffered by Anglo-Nordic males who are fixated on the biblical Semitic type, like Monica Lewinsky. I was not referring to Bill Clinton. I admit that. But the fact is, stop with the vegan or vegetarian, because whether or not you want to accept it, Mr. Clinton, I wrote the book on nutrition when many of these people didn't even know what the word was, and they don't know what the hell they're talking about. Let me give you an example. Since I'm going to get into this, and I'll do it in about 2 minutes or less, Mr. Clinton and all the others listening. This stuff was promoted back in the 70s, that if you went on a diet with no cholesterol and primarily plants, you could reverse the arterial occlusion, and you could be a new man. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't give up the cholesterol-laden foods, but cholesterol isn't the issue. It's the saturated fat that's the issue, number one, and whether or not the saturated fat that you're taking in is oxidizing inside your arteries and causing the occlusion. And that is prevented by taking large enough doses of vitamin C, vitamin A, and other antioxidants, which is something that these quacks should know about after 30 years, but they still don't admit the value of supernutrients. But let me go to the next step, Mr. Clinton and others listening to me. You're experimenting with these vegan diets as though it's something brand new. This was promoted by a health food quack in Sausalito in the 1970s. It was also heavily promoted by the Pritikin diet. The fact of the matter is, let me show you a study. Let me introduce you to another study that they don't want you to know about. I'll never forget it. As I was working for my PhD in human nutrition at the great University of California at Berkeley, which I earned in 1978, by the way, in less than 3 years, probably a world record. I don't think anybody else ever earned a PhD in a shorter time from such a great university. I learned the following. There was a study done out of India on 17,000 railway workers. Now, the reason I mention the number, Mr. Clinton, is because you have to have a large enough sample to draw a conclusion that has any validity whatsoever. You can't prove very much with a small population that's being studied. 10 people, 15 people means very little. 17,000 railway workers is a big sample. Why does it matter whether they were railway workers? Because they were largely involved in the same job category. Some were handlers, baggage handlers, some were ticket takers, whatever. But by and large, they were in the same profession, so they were subjected in the overall scheme of things to the same stresses from the job. They divided the group up into two groups. One half of the group were vegetarian, and the other half was not vegetarian. And take a guess what they discovered. The vegetarian group had a much higher rate of heart attacks than the non-vegetarian group. Now, this is something that's not known, but I'm an expert in the field, Mr. Clinton. I'm not saying go back to your cheeseburgers. Go and eat the fish, for God's sakes. Eat a low-fat diet. Take high doses of vitamin C and vitamin E. I guarantee you'll live a lot longer than going pure vegetarian, which is liable to kill you altogether, God forbid. And I'm telling you that for a reason. They have to ask, well, why would the vegetarians in India have had higher rates of heart attack, higher incidence of heart attack, to use a specific term, than the non-vegetarians? Remember, the non-vegetarians in India were eating things like ghee, which is clarified butter. You understand that? I mean, they were eating high-fat diets, and they had lower incidence of heart attacks than the vegetarians. The answer is quite simple, and I'll tell it to you at another time. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Whatever happened to the Ground Zero Mosque guy? What, did he go into hiding? Mr. Ralph, the so-called imam, where is he? Where is this guy? It's unbelievable to me. Where'd that story go? They decided to go to ground. There was a great... Oh, this article just came out. The UN wants to tax the rich in order to pay for the poor. That's right, just came out. They want higher taxes. France and Spain are urging a global tax to fight poverty. You hear this? We should not balance budgets on the backs of the poor, said UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. So France and Spain, two basket cases, are urging a global tax to fight poverty. So in other words, it's not bad enough that Obama is taxing you to death come a short period from now. But now they want you to make certain that the very large families in Africa and Asia are supported by you as well. Don't ask them to put it back, you know, to control themselves and have smaller families. No, you should give them more aid. You should pay a world tax in order to make things right. You should go to your barbershops and your beauty parlors and tell everybody you're going to pay a higher tax so people in Somalia can have 23 children. There was an interesting article in the New York Post over the weekend by Michael Goodwin. I want to read you two paragraphs. And he says, the nation deserves a major change in the balance of power. President Obama, Nancy Pelosi, and Harry Reid have presided over an outrageous plundering of national wealth and power. They jammed their hard-left partisan agenda down America's throat as though majority opposition to their pet projects was only a hurdle to be overcome. They squandered their limited mandate and even now facing political payback, remain determined to work their will as often as possible before the clock strikes midnight. Already the damage is historic, he writes. From the unlimited growth of government to ruinous levels of unemployment, taxes, and dependency to the rising tide of Islamic extremism, America is diminished and frightened. Now listen to this tail end. Western civilization is under assault, militarily and economically. Our rivals are emboldened, our friends confused, our enemies gleeful. All smell weakness from the world's lone superpower. Our leaders respond by apologizing for our history and achievement in waging class warfare. It's by Michael Goodwin. It's on michaelsavage.com. But I got to tell you something. What he wrote struck such a chord with me because my new book, Trickle Up Poverty, which will be out in a few weeks, I'm very excited by it. spells out chapter and verse what Obama has done and what Obama wants to do to our military, to our borders, to our economy that he's not yet achieved. You don't know what this man wants to do. You think it's over. He's only got started. He's now taking his breath for the next lap. There's only one book that you need. It's like the Bible on this subject. Trickle Up Poverty. I can't wait to say to you, go to the bookstores and give me some bookstore horror stories. Wait for October 5th. I'm just giving you a preview. It's going to be unbelievable. There was never a book, by the way, that was better timed than mine with Trickle Up Poverty, with what's going on in the country, number one. You talk about timing. Oh, yeah, it's real luck, Mike, sure. What a lucky guy you are, Mike. Yeah, only 50 years and you're an overnight success, as they say. Yeah, there's no luck in this. Believe me, I knew what was coming, and I timed it perfectly for the election. So there we are. What do you want to talk about? Humidity? Tennessee? No, humidity. We're only going to do politics now because, A, I shifted gears from the informal fun stuff, and then we have Mr. Rasmussen at the turn of the hour, which I want to ask him a few questions about the trends. Many of you, by the way, I think are wrongly assuming there's going to be a gross rout of the Democrats. Old Mike Savage is not so sure. I have a number of reasons that I don't think it's 100% sure that you're going to throw the bums out. I'd like to see it. I'd like to see most of them go to Siberia, but I don't think it's going to happen to the extent that people are predicting. And I want to ask sort of a statistical expert on the subject. 1-800-498-9800. Michael Savage, Ferris in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mike, I think you got it exactly right on this overconfidence in November. You talked earlier about my country turning to the right. As long as we have a chance in November. Now, here's why we don't have a chance. And this young girl in Delaware, I like it. I like what she's doing. I like the way she's being coached. I like she's doing all the right things. She bagged those two TV shows on Sunday.
Yes.
She bagged out on Fox News Channel. And you know
right.
that's Chris Wallace, Mike Wallace's son.
Yeah, Meatloaf's son, the liberal of the channel.
So she was smart in doing that. Who's handling her is doing a good job. And she also bagged out on Deface the Nation, which is another good move. But my concern in November...
Are you kidding? It's Face the Communist Nation.
Of course, but she bagged them, which is a beautiful move because she's called
absolutely. You know, I'll tell you, I you know who was after me after the UK ban to go on? It was 2020, wasn't it, Beowulf? Nightline asked me for over a year to go on Nightline. I wouldn't go on it. I mean, you got to be crazy to go on these shows. First of all, they hold a final edit, number one. Number two, you don't get a fair shot because they're setting you up to fall down like a department store dummy.
Well, that's what I like. She's not going for the bait. Palin went
all
for
right,
the
but
bait.
Then they brought up the witchcraft, which I thought was very funny in the sense that the left wing loves witchcraft. Don't they love Wicca? Didn't they introduce it into the military? I mean, it's to our credit that she liked witchcraft at some point or toyed with it. You'd think the left would embrace it, wouldn't you? But they're such hypocrites that they even put down what they embrace.
Yeah, but she's playing it right. The handlers are telling her what to do with the witchcraft.
Well, but the problem is that she's not as electable, they say, as the other Republican in that matchup. And I want to ask Rasmussen if he thinks that's true.
She can't lose. She cannot lose, Mike. She's unstoppable.
Well, I don't know. You don't know whether the Republicans are going to vote for her. And you don't know if the independents are going to vote for her. And you don't know if the Republicans are going to be so bummed out with this newcomer that they won't vote at all. There's another part to this puzzle that hasn't been described yet, which is the old line, old guard, check pants Republican, afraid of the Tea Party, afraid of conservatism, who won't even come out and vote. That's a whole new phenomenon that no one's defined but me, Ferris. And that's the one we have to watch out for.
Our Achilles heel is the voting booths, Mike. In other words, if we don't get in there now and hold their feet to the fire on all the absentee ballots that they've given to their
crowd. Oh, they're going to flood it with the fake absentee ballots, right. Okay, we're going to talk about that when I come back with Mr. Rasmussen, whose name I continuously mispronounce by accident, right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
It's the Savage Nation. We've gone from the sublime to the political ridiculous, and we're going to talk more about politics right now, which is I have a suspicion we're not going to see the rout that we are hoping for of the Democrats. I don't know, if you agree with me, but we have an expert on, right now, Scott Rasmussen. Scott, welcome to the Savage Nation. Scott, the Delaware situation, do you think that she can win, Miss O'Donnell?
You know, Christine O'Donnell is clearly behind. We have her down 11 in the latest polling. She's getting only 71% of the Republican vote. Some of the issues that she is facing have to do with the beating she's taken from some Republicans as well as Democrats in the media. But the bigger story is Delaware is a Democratic-leaning state. It is very difficult for any Republican to win there. So it's not... It's certainly, you shouldn't say she can't win, but it's an uphill fight.
Okay. You do polling all the time, and I know you've been dead accurate, really accurate. And the predictions for November, what do you think the losses will actually be, if any, on the Democrat side? Are they going to be this landslide towards the old Republican Party again, or what?
You know, if you're talking about the United States Senate, much of the talk, I think, has been overheated. I'd expect the Republicans to pick up 6 or 7 seats in the Senate, but not to get control, which is, you know, a good November, but it's not not the landslides we're talking about. In the House, it looks like the Republicans will gain control, barring some major unforeseen event. Some people are talking, you know, really high numbers and routes. Right now, I don't see that happening. Still a month and a half to go. Things could shift a little in either direction.
What about the local race here in California between Boxer and Fiorina? Who's going to win?
All of the polling, almost all of the polling, shows Barbara Boxer with a narrow lead below 50%. What that tells me is she is still the favorite. It is still California. You know, President Obama does fairly well. In California, there's a Republican governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, whose ratings are horrible. But Boxer is in a competitive enough race that if things slip, if she makes a mistake, if the next round of economic reports are out, she could be upset. If Barbara Boxer loses, it will have been a very long night for the Democrats.
Okay, last question on prognostication. What about the California governor's race? Meg Whitman spent $100 million of her own money, $120 million against Jerry Brown. Who's going to win that one?
Meg Whitman is up a little bit, which is one of the more stunning results that I've seen. And part of it's because of what you just said. She spent a lot of money. I don't understand spending that much money for a job that pays so little, but that's what she's trying to do.
That's my old joke. Who would spend that kind of money to make so little? But, okay, we know what that's all about.
Yeah, the other thing I think that's really helping is Jerry Brown is, you know, the caricature of a career politician. He was governor of the state literally half his lifetime ago. He has been running for and in office virtually his entire adult life. And in the year 2010, that's not a good thing to be. But, you know, you're asking me all these prognostications. One of the things that I think people have kind of overlooked is the elections are one part of the process. It's what happens after the election that matters. And if Republicans do win control of the House and don't show that they've heard the voter anger out there, the Tea Party movement and others will turn on them very quickly.
Well, that brings us to the Tea Party movement. How viable? We know that it is the voice of the people. It is the true grassroots movement that the liberals dream about every night that they have to manufacture. This is the real McCoy. But how effective are they in reality?
Very. The only reason we're having a debate in Congress over extending the Bush tax cuts is because of the Tea Party movement. This is a group that didn't exist in any form until a year and a half ago, and there are going to be several Tea Party candidates entering the United States Senate next year. It's rattling the Republican Party, and ultimately it's going to remake both political parties. The reason is this is an authentic grassroots movement. You know, Doug Schoen and I have put this together in our new book, Mad as Hell, and we have shown that people are looking at this in a different way. They see there's a political class on one side, mainstream Americans on the other, and two things that animate the Tea Party movement. One, fiscal policy concerns. People want the government to spend less, tax less, and have smaller deficits. And the second, a core belief, is that the Tea Party movement doesn't think anybody in Washington cares about what mainstream Americans think, and they want the politicians to listen. Both of these issues are driven by the Tea Party, but the attitudes are shared by a majority of Americans.
All right, so let me ask you this, Scott. You know, I believe the economy is the number one issue that will define this election. In fact, you know, the title of my book, Trickle Up Poverty, is focused on that. But do we then assume that the people have forgotten all of the social issues that were once so profoundly important in this country?
You know, when you talk about how they've forgotten the social issues, the answer is no. At different times, different issues are important. In the immediate aftermath of 9/11, for several election cycles, national security issues were the most important, and those were the things that defined the election process. Right now, the economy is the biggest issue, and it is this gap between the views in Washington and the views of the mainstream that is creating the tension. Most American voters believe one of the ways you help the economy is to cut spending and cut taxes and cut deficits. Most politicians want to go the other way. If it's a different year, a different issue may arise.
We're speaking with Scott Rasmussen, and Scott, you're about the best in the business. I have to go back to the social issues, and when I say social, I mean that's a pretty broad category. What about issues such as immigration? Doesn't that register on the horizon at all?
Immigration is a huge issue in Arizona. It is the single biggest reason that Governor Jim Brewer is cruising for re-election. She was struggling in the Republican primary earlier this year. Immigration plays a role in other states where people see it as connected to the economy. Immigration is an issue that again, plays off of this gap, that there is a difference between the mainstream and the political elites. So, yes, it has an impact, but it's not the direct impact that the economy has.
What about issues such as Obama's kowtowing to world leaders, the loss of America's prestige under Obama, the dancing with dictators, so to speak. Does that matter to voters?
Right now, anything to do with foreign policy is way down on the list. Now,
amazing.
What does connect, and again, this is, you know, I'll give an example. I'll pick a president you're probably not too keen on, but Franklin Roosevelt, during the Great Depression, had all kinds of economic policies that free market advocates just hate and can't understand.
I understand.
Okay.
Right.
But Franklin Roosevelt also understood that the American people needed assurance during that time. He was very good at using the fireside chats, the then new technology of radio, to reach out to people, to connect.
Yes.
And that's how he became a very popular fixture throughout the New Deal era. What is missing today, the common theme that is going through the nation today, is that our government does not have the consent of the governed. Only 21% of Americans think that it does. That means it doesn't have the legitimacy, the moral authority to deal with these problems, because of the gap that exists. And the Tea Party movement is saying, hey, we need to get the government to listen to the people again. It's like sometimes you have to yell at a child and say, stop, don't run into traffic. You need to listen to me. Listen to an adult, and we'll explain it to you. That's what Americans are saying. And so when you ask about specific issues, whenever they fit into that theme of saying, look, if the politicians had been following the American people for the last several decades, we wouldn't be in these problems today. Well, that can fit into the overall theme that the Tea Party is trying to address in a variety of ways. But the top expression of those issues today is all about the economy.
But when you say President Obama, you say Nancy Pelosi, you say Harry Reid, the names themselves almost become verbs. Every one of those names, Obama, Pelosi, and Reid, to me, project outrageous egotism, outrageous arrogance, and in fact, outrageous anti-Americanism, in the sense that they jammed their agenda down America's throat and boasted about it. Now, aren't those facts going to play a role in the election in November?
Absolutely. In fact, I'll take it back a step further. I believe the Tea Party movement, and this is, again, what we wrote about in our book, the Tea Party movement was a legitimate grassroots effort that was building under the surface for decades. It didn't just start this last year. People have
Right.
been worrying about this for a long time.
Absolutely.
The single, The single moment that really began to spark things was the passage of the bailouts of the financial institutions, the Wall Street bailouts. People were outraged about that, partly about the $700 billion figure, partly about the fact that Americans believe if you have a business and you do well, you keep the profits. If you don't do well, your business should fail. It shouldn't get bailed out by taxpayers. So that began to solidify things. People, when the bailouts were proposed, only 28% of Americans favored them. Looking back, only 25% think they were a good thing. After the bailouts, you then had the takeover of General Motors and Chrysler, which was opposed by an overwhelming majority of Americans. You had the extension of the bailouts to the insurance industry. You had the Cash for Clunkers program, which was opposed by a majority of Americans. Then you had the health care debate, which...
Obamacare. Do you remember Nancy Pelosi running around with that big hammer, boasting about being the hammer and saying, I hammer in the morning, I hammer in the afternoon, I hammer all the time, and glowing about her arrogant way about her overuse of power? Didn't that sort of sour the American people and the whole Democrat Party?
It soured the people on everything to do with official Washington. The Democrats are the party in power right now, and people are very sour on them. When the Republicans were in power, people were sour on them. The voters this year, in many ways, are doing the same thing they did the last couple of cycles. They're voting against the team that's in power. And this is, again, where the frustration that bubbles up is very real. There's a lot of people entering the political process for the first time. They know that something is wrong. They don't know what to do about it. They want somebody to listen to them and respond. And quite frankly, the only thing they hear from Republicans and Democrats often is, well, as long as our side wins, it'll get better.
Yes.
And that's not the way people are looking at it.
I agree 100%. The two-party system is two-card Monty to most of them. Scott Rasmussen, your book is Mad as Hell. I recommend it highly. And I thank you very much for being the crystal ball gazer extraordinaire and joining us on the Savage Nation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a great night.
Thank you. You see, now there's a man who studies this statistically. I do it intuitively. And so I come up with my prognostications in a different manner. But at the end of the day, his views and mine are very, very similar, truthfully. I personally think, however, that the social issues are the undercurrent underneath even the unemployment and the taxation. I believe the social issues, I believe the issues of security are far more important than statistics will show. I personally believe that the flood of immigrants is a major factor in why Fiorina, for example, in California is not winning against Boxer. It's because the damn Republicans refuse to tackle the illegal immigration issue. They're almost identical. They mirror images of the Democrats because they're pandering to the large number of illegals. Consequently, people are saying, go to hell, I'm not going to vote for you anyway. Why would you vote for candidate R against candidate D when candidate R won't even address the number one issue in California, for example, and Illinois for that matter, and Texas for that matter, and many other states, which is the draining effect of illegal immigrants on our society, both socially and economically? If they won't even mention immigration, why the hell would you vote for them? So that's the real reason some of these Republicans are not moving ahead. Meg Whitman, big deal. She'd be better than Jerry Brown because he's an old line hack. We've seen Moonbeam before. She at least is a businesswoman. I believe she would win and probably be more favorable for businesses in the state. But on social issues, I give her a D. She's going to be exactly the same as Arnold Schwarzenegger. She's going to use the same idiotic polling methodology that Schwarzenegger used that destroyed his ability to lead. And so therefore, I say if we had a real candidate, a genuinely conservative candidate, someone who could articulate not only the economics, but the social issues, including abortion and the killing of the unborn, which, by the way, I'm going to tell you right now, you're not going to believe it. I have a 37-point program to save America and trickle up poverty. I'm 2 weeks ahead of my book. I got the copy over the weekend, so you got to forgive me for this. I have a 37-point program to save America. In it is stop the abortion in this country the way it's practiced. And someone said to me when they saw it, why did you put that in the book? You know that that's going to kill the Republican Party. I said, hey, I'm not a Republican. I invented the independent in modern times. And there are millions of people who don't like the abortion mills. And they haven't forgotten that there are babies being killed like in a Holocaust. And that we have to limit this this infanticide that's raging through society. So, I think that there are other issues other than straight dollar issues. I don't think the bottom line is the bottom line. I'll be right back.
Savage.
All right, so there's an article on my website where it says President Obama removes creator from the Declaration of Independence. Obama addressed the Congressional Hispanic Caucus Institute. He incorporated part of the Declaration of Independence, but he removed any reference to the creator. It's a very important story. It goes to the heart of what's wrong with President Obama with regard to the American people. It's not that everyone's so, fanatically religious, but they understand this man is a naked Marxist. He's an atheist. By every measure, the man is everything you fear about him. Is he the exact Frankenstein that you make him? No. He may be worse than Frankenstein in the sense that Frankenstein was a fictional character. And Obama is very real, thank you. And Obama is so out of touch with the history of America and what we want as a future for America that in some ways he's worse than Frankenstein, incidentally. I know you don't want to hear it, but that's how I see it. And I want to go into another thing. Everyone says the economy is the number one issue, and I don't doubt it. Because if you don't have a job, all the rest of it doesn't amount to very much. But when I say in my subtitle, Stopping Obama's Attack on Our Borders, Economy, and Security, I mean very much that I think that immigration is a bigger story because it's the underlying reason for so many of our economic problems. When you have tens of millions of individuals who are A, not paying taxes, and B, stealing the poorest jobs in the country, what you're doing is pulling down the entire economy, and you're making poverty trickle up. That's number one. Number two, why do I say borders, economy, and security? Well, I explained borders. You know what the economy means. It's self-evident. The man has undermined our national security on every level. I've told you that. How can you overlook what this president has done? How can you overlook that the man is assaulting our military? He is assaulting NASA. He is trying to undermine our nuclear capacity. Do you understand any of this? I saved every one of these speeches, every one of these policies. It didn't just come and go like a news story to me. To me, it's a passion to try to get it through to you. So what I'm saying is it's not just about the economy. It's also about our security. It's also about our self-respect, incidentally. President Obama has diminished our self-respect as a nation, in case you don't know it. I don't think that's something you can pose as a question for as a pollster. I don't think you can ask people, do you think President Obama has diminished our image in the world? I don't think that would even compute statistically, but I'll tell you on an instinctual level, President Obama has diminished our image worldwide. I dream of a leader that one day I'll wake up to a leader that I'm proud of, who will actually get up and stand up and represent this country in a masculine way and project machismo on the world. How do you like that? Does that offend you? I want a masculine leader along the lines of Putin without the totalitarian instincts of Putin. I'd like to see a macho leader of the United States of America to bring us back from the abyss of insignificance that we have inherited over the last three or four presidencies. And I don't think anybody has defined it in that manner exactly. This is one man's opinion. I'm Michael Savage.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I need everybody to go back to your neighborhoods, to go back to your workplaces, to go to churches and go to the barber shops and go to the beauty shops and tell them we've got more work to do. Tell them we can't wait to organize. Tell them that the time for action is now, and that if each and every person in this country who knows what is at stake steps up to the plate, if we are willing to rise to this moment like we've always done, then together we will write our own destiny once more.
Lots of big news today. President Obama spoke at the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation Phoenix Awards dinner and, of course, left out the word, the creator, which is very interesting. I guess he thinks he is the creator. We have the Tea Party incident, the big wins for the Tea Party, which where everyone's talking about. Bill Clinton on Face the Nation saying that he likes tea. He's trying to lose weight. And now the House says it's going to leave 3 weeks early, adjourn early. That's interesting, huh? They're going to duck the people. All sorts of things. European Union is proposing an internet treaty. The United Kingdom is proposing that all paychecks go to the state first. Did you hear this one? Can you imagine? Imagine your paycheck going to the U.S. government, to Bonnie Frank first, to take out the taxes, and then you have to run after them for what they stole. Unbelievable. All on michaelsavage.com. Let's see. What else do we have for you? Let's go to michaelsavage.com. I've linked some amazing stories on the website. One of the most interesting is by Michael Goodwin of the New York Post, where he writes a welcome right turn. And what he says is, the nation deserves a major change in the balance of power. President Obama, Nancy Pelosi, and Harry Reid have presided over an outrageous plundering of national wealth and power. They jammed their hard-left partisan agenda down America's throat, as though majority opposition to their pet projects was only a hurdle to be overcome. They squandered their limited mandate, and even now, facing political payback, remain determined to work their will as often as possible before the clock strikes midnight. Already the damage is historic, from the unlimited growth of government to ruinous levels of unemployment, taxes, and dependency, to the rising tide of Islamic extremism. America is diminished and frightened. Western civilization is under assault, militarily and economically. Our rivals are emboldened, our friends confused, our enemies gleeful. All smell weakness from the world's lone superpower. All of this, by the way, and I have to tell you, is covered in 110,000 words by Michael Savage in Trickle Up Poverty. One picture is worth 1,000 words. Stop the Socialist Dems. Show this book cover everywhere. You can't buy it till October 5th, except on Amazon. There are many, many other stories, which we'll get to on the Savage Nation today. U.S. loans Mexico $1 billion to drill in Gulf. Let me repeat that. The United States is loaning Mexico $1 billion to drill in the Gulf of Mexico. What do we have, a foreign power running America? Answer, yes. Tell me how different it would be if an actual foreign power had invaded, conquered the people, disarmed the people, and took over the government. Could it be any different than what he's doing under this president? I don't see how it could be any different other than lining people up and putting them into concentration camps. Every policy that is passed may as well be that of a foreign government who has dominated America. 506,000 caught and released illegals are now fugitives. Individuals who were apprehended, then released ahead of their court proceedings and deemed fugitive when they failed to appear in court. 500,000. You hear what I'm saying? The liberal elites under Obama may as well be a foreign power. Proposed policy would let illegals go free. Black farmers push for $1.25 billion payout. Soros to donate $100 million to the radical slime in the Human Rights Watch that hates America. I go on down the list. It seems every story I'm reading to you is about a foreign power having taken over America. Toyota courts customers with Hispanic pride stickers. You hear this? This is in America. Somos muchos Latinos. The majority of Hispanic people in the country, are they of illegal alien status or not? Someone answer that. County welfare to children of illegal immigrants grows. Scandal at Justice Department enabling vote fraud. A top Justice Department official allegedly has openly refused to enforce laws that require states to remove ineligible names, dead people, felons from voter rolls. So if a foreign power took over the country, would they be doing anything differently? I don't know. I doubt it. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We have talked about Obama not seeming to respect our alliance with Israel. The Obama administration wants to talk with these rogue states that want nothing less than to see Israel wiped off the map. There are many leaders in the world, in fact, leaders and diplomats, who recognize Israel's right to exist. Joining us now is Eric Stackelback, who has recently spoken with some of these brave leaders.
Michael, it's always great to be here. You know, I went to two very significant events in Washington, D.C. last week. Now, the first event was the announcement of a group called the Friends of Israel Initiative. Now, this group was founded by the former president of Spain, José María Aznar. Now, you might remember him in the run-up to the Iraq War back in 2002, 2003. He was a very close ally of George W. Bush and Tony Blair. He's a conservative guy. He was the president and prime minister of Spain from 1996 until 2004, a very impressive guy. Now, he was voted out in 2004, Michael, if you might remember, a week after the Madrid bombings in Spain. The Spanish people basically caved. They voted Aznar out, voted a socialist by the name of Zapatero into office, and it hasn't worked out too well for him.
Why do you say that?
Right now, Spain's economy is collapsing, and their foreign policy is a soft socialist mess. So I think a lot of people in Spain are kind of longing for José María Aznar, Michael, and I could see why. After meeting with him last week, I sat down for a one-on-one exclusive interview with the former president of Spain, and we talked about this new Friends of Israel initiative that he's heading up. Now, Michael, this is very interesting. When we think of Europe, we think of the international community, we think of them being very anti-Israel, if not anti-Semitic. But Aznar is one former world leader based in Europe who is anything but, and he's assembled this group.
Well, who's involved with this group?
People like Václav Havel, who was the ex-president of the Czech Republic, is a legend in human rights circles, a former dissident against the Soviet Union. He has the former president of Peru involved in this initiative. He has several opinion leaders in Europe, some thinkers and philosophers and writers in Great Britain, of all places, which is definitely a hotbed of anti-Israel sentiment. So he's assembled this group of mostly Europeans, and John Bolton is the most prominent of the Americans involved, the former U.S. ambassador to the U.N. under the Bush administration. We all know him so well by his trademark mustache, but also by his strong, strong anti-jihad stance. And he's a gutsy guy who has stood up to Islamic radicalism, to rogue regimes in the Middle East, to Iran, time and time again, has John Bolton. This is right now a mainly European movement, and this is so needed right now in Europe with the anti-Israel sentiment there. So Aznar is doing a great thing here.
What did he say when you spoke with him?
Just some of his quotes, Michael, from my interview with him, which I came away from very impressed. And this is exactly the kind of leader that the Western world needs right now. Not only Spain, not only Europe, but the West in general, with President Obama basically having abdicated his role as the leader of the free world and abdicating America's role as the protector, the defender, and the leader of the free world. We need new, charismatic, conservative leaders to come to the forefront, people with moral clarity, with honesty, and with guts, and Aznar fits that bill. I don't know if he's going to run again for office. I wish he would, but here's some of what he told me, Michael, and I quote, "If Israel goes down, we all go down."
Exactly. Pretty strong words in today's politically correct times.
Very bold statement. He explained that, quote, "Israel is not just a Middle Eastern country. It's a Western country in the Middle East. So if Israel is a part of the Western world and is eliminated as part of the Western world, this is a problem for all of us, not only for Israel. It would be a great victory for the enemies of democracy," he continued, "and for the enemies of freedom." And he says, "I cannot explain Europe, my country, or myself without referring to the heritage of Israel and the Jewish people. Aznar said they share with us the same values, freedom, democracy, tolerance, pluralism, and human rights." And to that I say, amen. Now, Jose Maria Aznar, this is a pretty bold move, Michael. You figure Europe is such an anti-Israel hotbed, the European Union, the UN has such a foothold in Europe. So you would think that Aznar is going to get some pushback here. It's going to be interesting to see what kind of leading names he assembles. Like I said, he's already got some heavy hitters on board. But I want to see how this Friends of Israel group progresses because, as we know, it's never been more needed. With Iran on the threshold of nuclear weapons, they're so close. With these ongoing peace talks between the Israelis and Palestinians, with the disingenuous Palestinian side, and frankly, these people still don't recognize Israel's right to exist. I hold no hope and no faith in these peace talks.
Gee, these talks never seem to accomplish anything.
We have these talks going on, yet none of these countries recognize Israel's right to exist. So it's kind of a zero-sum game there, I think. But with all that said, and with the global movement against Israel, to see Aznar start a global movement in support of Israel was very striking, and it was a good turnout here in Washington of some very influential figures. So I'm encouraged about this group. I'm also encouraged, Michael, by another group.
And what group is that?
That group calls themselves Team B2. Now, this is a group of national security experts, some of the best in the business. A group called, an organization called the Center for Security Policy is sponsoring this Team B group and their new report, which revolves around the threat of Sharia law in America. Now, you have ex-U.S. military officials, the ex-director of the CIA, James Woolsey, an ex-FBI special agent, some leading investigative journalists, ex-DOJ, guys from the Department of Justice, attorneys, several leading, very legitimate former government and military officials put this report together, Michael. They're calling themselves, as I said, Team B2, and they're focused on the threat from Islamic Sharia law here in the U.S. Now, Team B1, you might recall, was during the 1970s, similar deal. Michael, a group of national security experts in 75, 76, put together a group, called themselves Team B, but they were focused on the threat from Soviet communism because they were convinced the government, the U.S. government at the time, did not comprehend that threat.
Right.
They released a report on Soviet communism and the threat of the Soviets. What their modern-day equivalent, Team B2, is doing is very similar, but it's focused on the jihadist Islamist threat. And I'll tell you, it was a very impressive presentation they had here in Washington last week, Michael. And they
what
were,
kind of names?
Well, we have James Woolsey, Michael, who's the former director of the CIA. We have General Jerry Boykin, who's one of the founding members of Delta Force, a guy who was also involved in the Black Hawk Down incident in Somalia. They're two of the leading names. We have Andrew McCarthy, who's a former federal prosecutor for the Department of Justice. McCarthy prosecuted the notorious Blind Sheikh in 1993. He was a guy who was behind the first World Trade Center bombing. And another name that was there, Michael, that all of our listeners will recognize was Buzz Aldrin, the former astronaut. So there were some heavy hitters in attendance for this Team B report, and it was the kind of event that Washington, that official Washington, meaning the Obama administration, has to stand up and take notice of. These were no amateurs. These were leading, and Frank Gaffney himself, who kind of put this whole thing together. He's the president of the Center for Security Policy here in D.C., a national security think tank. Frank Gaffney himself is a former defense official for the Reagan administration. So look, this was some of the leading national security minds, some of the best in the business, and this was a powerful, important report.
But do you think even with this report, the Obama administration will do anything to protect us?
I absolutely do not think he will, Michael, and that's one of the big problems. All we can do is, and people like this group, Team B, all we can do is continue to get it out there. Get the message out there. Get the threats out there. Explain the threats to the American people. And then when 2012 rolls around, the Obama administration, and even this November 2010, the Obama administration will be held accountable for not only not taking these threats seriously, but in many cases, emboldening our enemies. The American voter, a well-educated American voter, at the end of the day, it won't matter what the Obama administration does. We know it's not going to be good in the national security realm. But at the end of the day, if we have a well-educated American voter who understands the threats, it's so important, and it's not that hard to understand once you do a little bit of reading. I mean, at the end of the day, they want to kill you and your grandchildren. That's not that hard for the American voter to understand. At the end of the day, if we have an educated American voter at the polls, then the Obama administration, they might not want to listen now to Team B and to this impressive new report. They might not want to acknowledge the threat now. But when the American voter speaks in November and in 2012, then they'll have to acknowledge. They'll have no choice but to acknowledge the threat.
Thanks for the update, Eric.
Michael, thanks. Always a pleasure. And just a heads up, debuting, I believe, September 21st will be the new episode of my show, Stackelbeck on Terror. Now, you can see it on CBNNews.com, and it will focus. It's a special episode, Michael, focusing entirely on the Muslim Brotherhood threat here in America. And another side note, you can now see the show on Friday nights on the Dish Network and DirecTV nationwide on satellite TV. Thanks again.
It's important that groups like these keep us informed. If the government media complex had their way, groups like this would not even exist, and we would truly be living in the dark ages.
Savage.
I want to review a big new show that appeared on HBO last night. I mean, I was looking forward to it for a couple of reasons. It's called Boardwalk Empire. And it was directed by Martin Scorsese, who was, you know, a great director. It's got a gangster theme, which I'm fascinated by, as are many Americans. And so I watched it. Big fanfare, $20 million production, TV series, the people who gave us The Sopranos, right? Well, my headline is Boardwalk Empire: How the Princes of Hollywood and the Princes of Politics Have Lost Touch with the People. Now, this new HBO miniseries, which was supposed to be as good as The Sopranos, many of the same producers and writers, etc., were involved with it. It was one of the most unwatchable shows I've ever seen in my TV life. Let us start with the lead character, Steve Buscemi. His voice sounds like someone on laughing gas. His face looks like he has a medical condition. He is not attractive. In fact, he is an almost freakish-looking man. He should never have been chosen to play the lead gangster who created the mob in Atlantic City in the 1920s. The first rule of drama is go for good-looking people or compelling people who can hold an audience. Steve Buscemi is neither good-looking nor compelling. Steve Buscemi is at best a B-actor, a supporting actor. Supporting roles is where he has always shown his best. That's number one. So the lead for Boardwalk Empire on HBO was horrible. He was unwatchable. He was unbelievable. He didn't look tough enough. He didn't look right. It was all wrong. Number two. Allegedly, this series was directed by Martin Scorsese, which I don't doubt, as his name is all over it. I can't fault the directing per se, but the story was so garbled, so meaningless, and so predictable, and so it was boring. You had the rich celebrating in the, you know, houses of prostitution and in the speakeasies with the rich meals, and then it was juxtaposed with the dirt poor Irish in the slums of Atlantic City. The humble household, the meal of the poor family, as opposed to the meals of the rich dining on pheasant and dancing with the flappers. Every scene could have been predicted before it was projected on the screen. Number three, the constant flashbacks to the 1920s era was horrible. I don't know about you, but the music was terrible. The Eddie Cantor music was sad. Unlistenable. I turned the TV off. I had to turn the sound off during it. It was as though Scorsese was trying to create a documentary of the period as opposed to a compelling drama for HBO. I'm talking about Boardwalk Empire, The Princes of Hollywood and The Princes of Politics, and how they both lost touch with the people. And here is part two. Now, the reason I'm talking about this series is because it goes to the heart of the problem in America today. You see, both the Princes of Hollywood and the Princes of Politics have lost touch with the people. The princes of Hollywood have forgotten that the people must be seduced, as it were, into the theaters or onto the couches to watch their productions. Yet, they could not care less. They are now producing movies or TV series like this for their own entertainment and to reward themselves. In essence, Steve Buscemi, Martin Scorsese, Larry David are all members of the same sorority from Brooklyn or Manhattan, and they all go back to the same era. And they think that the entire world cannot wait for the next flatulence to emerge from their bowels. Well, I've got news for them. This one, Boardwalk Empire, is unwatchable. I had to turn it off. It was like going to the dentist without anesthesia. It was painful to watch. It was painful to listen to. I understand it cost $20 million to produce. Now, the set was supposedly a direct copy of the Atlantic City Boardwalk reconstructed in Brooklyn. All that is quite admirable. But so what? A documentary from the era would have been more interesting. Now, take a look at what else HBO has to offer, and you'll see why I'm going on and on about this flop, Boardwalk Empire. They offer a left-wing hackneyed doper named Bill Maher and propose that he is some serious politician or political commentator. And who is it that's entertained by Maher? Certainly not the majority of the American people. They detest this fool's anti-American politics and antics. So who enjoys him? Why, it's the same crowd that seems to think that Steve Buscemi can play a lead, the same crowd that thinks Larry David's mocking of Jesus are entertainment. And so, therefore, this is the crisis that America is facing. The princes of Hollywood and the princes of politics have lost touch with the people. I'm Michael Savage, and I approve of my review. There are some other reviews. I really want to go on for a few more minutes on this because the majority of reviews from paid critics were positive. Only a few people dared step out and attack Martin Scorsese. For example, Jim Windorf, Vanity Fair, said the opening scene did nothing for me. Night, fog, boat coming into harbor with a load of whiskey. The water looked like water in a big tank rather than real ocean water. As the episode reached the end of the first act, despite Buscemi seeming all right to me, he said, I still had the almost physically uncomfortable feeling you get when you're not sure whether or not you're liking what you're watching. Do you keep going or bail out? That's Jim Windorf of Vanity Fair. Ken Tucker of Entertainment Weekly said, the first few hours, even beyond the Scorsese opener, seemed leery of dwelling on the historical details that made Atlantic City distinctive during this era. The show itself doesn't do enough to make Atlantic City a distinctive character in its own drama. That's very weak. Reactions from regular reviewers online. Were the constant gunshots to the head just a little too much? Did we need to consistently see a man's head explode as a result of a shotgun fired at point-blank range? The script and the history of this episode was simplistic at best. The structure of the prohibition developed quickly, but overnight. Anyway, they go on. It was plotting. It was horrible. Don't watch it. Don't watch Boardwalk Empire. Martin Scorsese is worthy of certainly better than this, but apparently it was take the money and run, Marty. Run. Run, Marty, run. Run, Marty, run. Look, I know you worry about what's going on in Afghanistan, what's going on in the Gulf, and what's going on in the White House. But with all of that, you shouldn't have to worry about your computer on top of everything else. So go visit my advertisers at carbonite.com. They'll back up all your important files so they're safe no matter what happens. Use my offer code SAVAGE, and you're going to get 2 months free with your subscription. That's Carbonite.com, offer code SAVAGE. You know, of all the things I've done, you know what I get the most feedback on? I don't get a lot of feedback. I don't take emails, by the way. I did for years. I get 1,200, 1,500 a day. I had an employee who would spend half a day, at least a half a day going through it. Most of it's junk mail and hate mail. We don't even get, I don't care what you send me an email. I don't want to hear what you say about me. Get your own show if you don't like it. You know, that's all I feel about it. Otherwise, have the guts to call 1-800-449-8255 and debate me. That's all. Don't send a hateful little email, and don't be a little, cyberbully with your hate on the internet, because it doesn't amount to a hill of beans, as you well know. No one reads that crap. It has no impact. That's why you have no money. So you spend all your time writing a little hate mail on the email on the net. Who reads that garbage? You're like a little girl, most of you, with the clicking. All you're doing is clicking your little hatred. You're like a little girl. You can't make a living, so you sit home clicking your hatred because you didn't become Dostoevsky, most of you. What I get the most calls about is the story I told about going up to the Catskill Mountains when I was a kid with my father with the rope on a DeSoto with the canvas. People love that story. So I think I'll tell the story again. But I actually embellished it a little more. We have to go back to the Bronx because the kids have to be in school. So now it's sad. It's the end of the summer. It rained up in the mountains. The summer's over. The kids hated August. It was like gloomy. July was like, oh, the summer's still a whole summer. You know what a summer is to a child? It's an eternity. Late June was the halcyon days. They were the most beautiful because you had the whole summer. July was gorgeous. And once in a while as a kid, you'd let the idea that August was going to come soon enter your mind. It's like thinking you're going to die. I thought of going back to blackboards and chalk and teachers with toilet water that gave you a migraine headache that you could puke from. So August would come and go, and then it would rain a little, and you knew you were already going back to the slum. So now comes August. Dad comes up from the city. This is now you're packing up to go home. Now here comes the DeSoto already from New York. And there's the big, I don't know why he bought a DeSoto. I think taxi drivers used them. He heard it was a great car. They don't even make it anymore. DeSoto, by the way, was a vicious conquistador. You don't know about that. You hear the language of the Hispanics is Spanish. It isn't. It's a language of conquest and imperialism, incidentally. That's the sad part. I mean, the language of the people south of the border with America is various native languages, Indian languages, and Mayan, Aztec tongues. Spanish was imposed upon them by the conquerors, like DeSoto, but I don't want to bore you with the details. I'll have people say, oh, I'm proud of my Hispanic heritage. It's not your heritage. It's the heritage of conquest, that's all. Spanish imposed it upon you. Proper language to speak, if you're really interested in your heritage, would be the Mayan dialect, if you're from that region. That's why Mel Gibson did that great movie. Remember that great movie? What was the name of it, Beowulf? Do you remember it? It was Apocalypto. I love that movie. It done in the Mayan language. I mean, whatever you think about Mel Gibson and his treatment of women, the man is a heck of an actor and movie director. And a brilliant chance he took with that movie in the dialect of Mayan. So anyway, we're going home. And he puts the rope again. Now, we're not just... See, I'm a boater. But nobody in my family ever went on a boat. They didn't even go on rowboats. They were so afraid of the water. These were landlocked people from Eastern Europe. The idea of water was alien to them. The closest they came to water were whitefish and pike. I think that's the closest they ever came to actual seeing water. Now, where I get the water from, I don't know. But the idea of how to handle ropes and lines, I think I got from my father. And I don't know where he got it from. But when he would secure the line, the rope, on the rack on top of the DeSoto over the luggage and the goods that we were taking back to New York, literally that car could have turned over on Highway 17 on the way back, God forbid. If the car had turned over and everybody in it had been thrown out on the highway and it was upside down with the wheels spinning, they would find all of the goods intact. Nothing would have broken. Not a dish would have broken. He put the goods ahead of the family. In a certain way, goods were precious because he dealt in goods. The dog would have got flung out of the window probably and lived. He would have wound up eating a hot dog somewhere in the Red Apple Rest. But the goods, I guarantee, that could have been resold a week later because of the way he secured it with the ropes and the knots and the triple knots and the line. I don't know how he learned it. I don't have any idea. For a landlocked guy, God bless him, Dad. I have a picture of him, by the way, right over me in the studio with a picture of my dear brother next to him, and Fats Domino next to them. So he's over. Here he is, standing here looking at me, right from the little bungalow colony with the undershirt. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The president spoke at the Congressional Black Caucus dinner, okay? Listen.
The very first CBC dinner, the great actor and activist, Ozzie Davis, told the audience America was at a crossroads. And although his speech was magnificent and eloquent, he boiled his message down to a nice little phrase when it came to how America would move forward. He said, it's not the man, it's the plan. It's not the man, it's the plan.
Oh, you got to stop
this. That was true 40 years ago.
Wait, replay that.
It's not the man, it's the plan. It's not the man, It's the plan. That was true 40 years ago. It is true today. We all understood that during my campaign. This wasn't just about electing a black president. It was about a plan to rescue our economy and rebuild it on a new foundation.
In this case, it was about the man, the great pretender.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender.
Go on, big spender.
You got a plan to finish. Now, remember, the other side has a plan, too.
Not the great pretender, but the big spender.
It's a plan to turn back the clock on every bit of progress we've made. To paraphrase my friend Deval Patrick, the last election was a changing of the guard. Now we've got to guard the change. Because everything that we are for, our opponents have spent 2 years fighting against. They said no to unemployment insurance, no to tax cuts for ordinary working families, no for small business loans, no.
Oh, but there should be a no.
Providing additional assistance.
And the people are saying it.
They want to go to school. That's their motto. No, we can't.
No to any more big government spending, Mr. Obama.
Yes, I'm the great pretender.
Now, here's SF Mayor Gavin Newsom on the stimulus.
Look, I understand why people are fearful. I don't like the spending any more than anyone else. There are components of the stimulus, and trust me, I understand the stimulus is well or better than anybody. It is not wrong to criticize parts of that stimulus as disproportionately saving jobs in the public sector and not stimulating private sector.
Hey, Mr. Newsom. That's what the Dems are about.
That's not something that I'm proud to say as a Democrat. It's not something I want to say, but it's true, and I must say it.
Spend, spend, spend on the public dime.
We should have put more money in infrastructure, and we should put more money to do the kind of things like we're doing with the Jobs Now program. As painful as that may seem to some to subsidize a job in the private sector, I think it's the right thing in this excruciating, difficult economic time.
And Bill Clinton's getting on the eating healthy bandwagon.
Have you looked that far down the road to grandchildren and the blessings of grandchildren in your life?
Yeah, I'm trying to stay healthy enough to have them. That's what I want to do.
Well, you look quite fit. How are you, and as I understand it, Chelsea asked you to slim down a little bit before you walked her down the aisle. But with your travel to Haiti, with CGI coming up, with being on the campaign trail, have you been able to manage to keep those eating habits healthy?
My travel schedule is cut back on my exercise some, which is frustrating to me. But I follow a pretty strict diet, and I try to, limit how much I eat and what I eat. And it's lost 20 pounds or so.
Go on.
Vegan or vegetarian or?
Yeah, pretty much. Once in a while I'll eat fish, but not often, because I'm trying to be one of those experimenters. Since 1986, several hundred people who.
Why don't you try Michelle Obama's high ice cream diet?
Tried essentially a plant-based diet, not ingesting any cholesterol from any source. I have seen their bodies start to heal themselves, break up the arterial blockage, break up the calcium deposits around the heart. 82% of the people who've done this have had that result. So I want to see if I can be one of them. I've got to do it a few more months before we'll have any idea if it worked.
The old GOP horse, Senator Murkowski from Alaska, doesn't want to let go of the reins. Listen to this.
It's not about undermining the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. It's about representing the people of your state, of my state, the state of Alaska. And if the people of the state of Alaska are going to stand up and say, Lisa, you've got to stay in this. You've got to give us an opportunity to participate, to show you, to show everyone who we want to represent us. Give us a choice.
She says Joe Miller doesn't represent the people there.
I'm not going to define people by labels. Who's a real Republican? Who's not a real Republican?
Oh, no.
What I look at is, do you represent the values of the state of Alaska? Do you represent the people
in
terms of what it is that they need, they hope for, what
the Tea
they
Party,
hope for
in other words,
future.
The people did speak in Alaska. It's time for you to say mush. What's this with the Apple iPhone? I don't even own one. I'm still like using the equivalent of the Royal Portable cell phone. I mean, people laugh at me. I'm one of these older guys. I have a cell phone like a Nokia from years ago. I refuse to get rid of it because I know how to use it. Like, I hide it now when I take it. I feel ashamed. It's like hiding pornography 30 years ago. When I pull out this phone, I go into like a closet. I shade it underneath a hat. I don't want anyone to see my handheld device. They snicker at me. All these young people running around with the oracles in their hand, they think that they're geniuses. They have a device in their hand and they move their hand left, right, up, down, this, press, that. And suddenly they think they're Einstein. It's amazing to me. No, I don't have one of those things. So what's this with the antenna? Doesn't work? Why doesn't it work? I thought Apple was the apple of America's eye. Now what is it? What is it? The apple isn't working. Where is it? The apple is losing money. The antenna cuts off a call. Can you imagine a girl being cut off when she's talking about her shoes? That's a real loss to America, isn't it? Can you imagine some of these yentas talking about the where they're going tonight, what they're going to do shopping? It's unbelievable to me what people talk about on cell phones. They can take cell phones and throw them in the garbage as far as I'm concerned. Ah, what's the use?
Savage.